Hello and welcome to the fifth season of Somerset Stories, the podcast which explores the lives of the people who live, work and create in Somerset. My name's Lewis Webb and we're back with brand new weekly episodes where I get to share the stories of some of the inspiring, creative and successful individuals and families that make this beautiful county their home. We've had a bit of time off, but we're really excited to carry on with this podcast and to continue to have great conversations with interesting people in the area. As usual, your reviews, ratings, comments and feedback is always appreciated. So if you'd like to send us a message, you can email hello@somersetstories.com. My guest this week is the UK's number one motivational business speaker, Brad Burton. Born in Salford, Manchester, a series of big moments and even bigger decisions led Brad to leave the Northwest as a young adult and start his life again in Somerset. I won't spoil the interview, but it's safe to say a lot has changed since then, and these days you'll find him writing books and speaking to business owners and big conferences, where his fresh, positive message is one that stands out amongst the buttoned-down corporate community. We spoke quite a while back, and I've been saving the episode, so there are a couple of dated references early on, which you'll have to allow for. Brad, welcome to Somerset Stories.
Thank you so much, Lewis.
We're recording this just after the long bank holiday, the Jubilee weekend. Did you get up to much?
As always, far too much figgy pudding and brandy, but no, it was exceptional. I think what was the sad thing about it, it felt a bit like a Friday, Sunday. I was rather hoping it was going to be a Friday, Saturday, but it wasn't. But you know what? It was a well-needed break, an enforced break, and one that was great for the country.
Good. So you're in your office, which I know makes quite regular appearances on your social media as well. How have you customised your working environment to be like the most productive for you?
Yeah, but you know, prior to lockdown and what have you, we had a wonderful office over in Taunton, and you know, we had 15 staff there and the likes. And actually, since the pandemic, lots of home working. We've had to downsize a lot of the business as well, if I'm really honest. And actually, we realised that none of us knew as to how long this thing was going to last. I think if I was to ask you, Lewis, when Boris asked us to stay at home, how many days, months, did you think it was going to go on for from that point?
Well, he said it was going to be 12 weeks, didn't he?
Well, exactly. So we prepared for a 12-week battle. If you imagine being a boxer, you know, and you say, hey, guess what? It's going to be 12 rounds. And then after those 12 rounds, you go, you might need to do another one, and then another one, then another one. And actually, after you're at 36 rounds, you go, maybe we're not going back after 3 months. So we prepared for a three-month battle, and 6 months on, we realised that wasn't happening. So we kind of got rid of the office, and we decided to make home an office. Now, I've actually got two offices. I've got one an upstairs one. I've also got a garden one where I do my podcast. But no, I've made it very much my space. Almost as a bad example, but for Star Wars freaks out there, it's my Darth Vader zone, effectively, where I feel warm and it's got all my stuff around there, and it just gives me a nice vibe. And I think it's really important that you have a nice space to work in. It certainly is right now, because if you think about everything that's happened with the lockdown, is we've all become kind of isolated. We've all become islands. So somewhere along the way, if you're going to become live on an island, you might as well make it as funky and as welcoming as you can.
You've been in Somerset for over 25 years now, but you've not picked up the accent, have you?
Well, you know what? I actually have. And what I mean by that is that, how are you doing there, Babber? You know, when I think about it, I used to speak very much Mancunian. You're not our kid, proper. I used to speak through my nose. And it's only when I look back at videos of the time, I didn't even realise. So I've actually smoothed my voice. My voice is still a whole lot smoother than it once was, but you're right, I've not really necessarily picked up a Somerset accent. However, Somerset is most certainly my home. Like, most certainly I'm my home. I go back down to Manchester now, Salford, and it doesn't feel like home. I just can't wait to hit the RAC building on the M5 when I'm coming back from north, and it's home. I'm on the homeward straight.
So you grew up in Salford, as you mentioned. What are some of your earliest memories?
Love Salford. Back in the day I did. And you know, it's it was a wonderful, almost Coronation Street-esque life that I lived. And you know, you'd leave your door open, you go and borrow a cup of sugar off your neighbour until you know your payday comes round. It was just all a bit very much like that. It would be all too easy to paint a picture that my life and my early life wasn't great. It was good. You know, my dad left when I was 6 months old, and that's okay. And my mum got remarried. My stepfather, Frank, who I consider to be my dad, you know, I still call him dad to this day. And you know, I was brought up on a Terry Street, and I was a fun, loving kid, very adventurous. And it's funny because I was talking to someone the other day, and that some of those traits that I had, I was a class clown. I loved the sound of my own voice. Ironically, they're the same sort of skills that I built my business upon. And I think that so many people have things in the background that they kind of dismiss or kind of override, when actually you need to look at what you've got in your background that actually you can use in your future. So my life was good. My mum brought me up primarily. My stepfather and my mum, they split up when I was 7. That was quite difficult for me. My mum effectively brought me up. She was mum and dad, main breadwinner, holding down 3 jobs. So she gave me a work ethic and a real value about doing the right thing as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did the breakup of that relationship kind of, did you feel the need to take on more grown-up responsibilities at that young age?
What a great call. Yeah, very protective of my mum. I remember when she was about 50, when I was 15, and a phone call went, I picked up the phone and it was some fireman that my mum was dating, and I gave him a mouthful. And it's like, what are you doing? My mum came back and said, Brad, what are you doing? So yeah, very protective of my mum. And it's funny enough, she lives now over in Burnham-on-Sea, my mum. She's 77. And, you know, I speak to her every single day. In fact, prior to coming on here, I spoke to her. Interesting story about that, and I'll talk to you, maybe you remind me later, about Paul O'Grady, Sprouts and dog jackets. It'll all make sense.
All right, well, we'll come back to that one then. You mentioned being the class clown at school. Is that very much how you define your years there?
Yeah, I mean, I came away with no formal education. I think my CV is full of it. It might as well have a foreword by J.K. Rowling. It's, you know, my CV isn't great. However, that didn't matter to me because I was really about the moment, living in the moment. That's what I was about. There was never any future. I don't mean that in a negative way. There was never any big plan other than enjoy life. And I enjoyed school. I enjoyed school, even though I wasn't academic necessarily. But I also think there's a piece there from a modern day schooling perspective that actually, you know, I'm not sure how relevant it is knowing Pythagoras' theory in the normal world. And if you look at me with no qualifications, yeah, you know, I've written 4 books, speak at the highest level, I've run my own business. How did that serve me? The only thing it kind of served was about structure in life, structures in days. So I think there's an argument there from an education perspective that actually that should be reformed as well. I'm not sure should be on the question side now. But, you know, I just think that... yeah. So from my perspective, in terms of my education, I didn't see it as anything. I just existed day to day to day, from one fun thing to the next fun thing.
Your reason for leaving the Northwest is a big part of your story. And I know it's something which, you know, isn't easy to go back and revisit. But can you just share what happened?
Oh, so it's not a fun story, and this is the thing, you know, I got shot at in 1995, and, you know, it would be wonderfully, you know, Dr. Dre to go, oh yeah, I was involved in this, that and the other, and that's the reason, but that's not the case. It is in my book, my second book, Get Off Your Arse 2, chapter 2, the full story as to what's going on, and I'm going to give you the short version now, and I'm not going to go into specifics because it's a dark story and it's not one that you go, oh yeah, the audience listening to this go, oh well, that's amazing, I'm glad I listened to that. You wouldn't be glad that I told you, so therefore I'm not going to do it. But needless to say, circumstances came my way where actually I ended up with 2 bullets through my window, and I moved overnight. Now this is the interesting thing. January 2nd, 1995, that was the worst day of my life. No question. If you could put an actual date and a time, it was that. 2 o'clock in the morning, 2nd of January, 1995. My world changed overnight through no circumstances, that was nothing to do with me, but circumstances changed where actually I had to leave Salford. And if I said to you there, Lewis, you've got 2 bullets put through your window tonight. You've now got a death threat on you. You now have to leave somewhere where nobody knows you. Where would you go?
Well, actually, that was my kind of follow-up question, which was, of all the places in the world, why did you choose to come to Somerset?
So let me ask you the same question. If you had to move now, 2 bullets through your window, you've got to go where nobody knows you, you can't have any contact with anyone else, any of your current friends, where would you go?
I don't know. It would have to be somewhere that I'd never been before.
Right. And that effectively was what happened here. So my mum, her friend, she was, my mum used to live in Salford. She was a psychiatric nurse. One of the people who worked with her, they lived in Manchester. She'd met somebody from a Somerset rugby club on a night out, and she'd moved to Somerset. So my mum's friend had moved to Somerset. She'd been there on a holiday, and that was really effectively it. And I got a pin. I got a pin, closed my eyes, and just went, and it landed in Somerset. It landed in Weston-super-Mare. And that's what happened. So it was as simple as that, and my life would have been fundamentally different. Now, what's really interesting, look, I'm a motivational speaker. I'm supposed to find the positive in everything. But let me be quite clear. You and I would not be speaking right now if it wasn't for that. I wouldn't have written 4 books. I would never have met my wife on Weston-super-Mare High Street where Greggs is right now, right? That's just crazy. And you think about the innocuousness of that. But what happened when I first moved down in 1995? I was on benefits. I spent 2 years on benefits. And, and what people don't necessarily know about me, for all my plaudits and all this stuff about, you know, UK's number one motivational business speaker and my books and my business successes, I've actually left school with no qualifications. I got shot at when I was 21, been addicted to drugs twice, done 4 years on benefits and delivered pizzas in Burnham-on-Sea at the Pavilion when I was 31 years old. So you know, two sides of the same coin as to which Brad Burton I am. And the same goes for you, Lewis. If I was to go back far enough in your life, I will find something questionable. The difference is, anyone who's listening to this one, you've done something questionable, which actually you wouldn't necessarily want people to know. The difference is I made the decision. I made the decision to not hide from who I was or my past and actually bring it forward. And when you play blackjack, an ace can be a 1 or it can be an 11. For many, many years, I used those aces as 1s. And at the very point when I decided to use them as 11 is when my life turned around. And I remember sitting on Weston-super-Mare High Street, and I had 2 pairs of like jeans or tracksuit bottoms. One was reasonable. The other ones were all washed out because I've worn them so many times. And I remember being on benefits. And there comes a point when after about 6 months of being on the dole or benefits, dole in Omer, you know, you no longer have the Gillette, you know, Mac 3 anymore, razor blade. So now you've got to go and get those 99 pence Bic ones, the orange ones with a single blade. And every time that you shave, it cuts you. And that in itself was, so, you know, if you go to an interview, you cut. So the whole thing was quite dark, if you see what I'm saying. Everywhere you look was pain. Pain that I wanted to go back to Salford, where I'd left all my friends and my house. I had a house, I had a mortgage. I just left it overnight, gone. That's it, I left. And I remember sitting on Weston-super-Mare High Street and watching people watching. And I remember almost like grieving. And I was depressed and I'd gotten Prozac from the doctors. And it's funny because I look at that grieving process. And the first thing when everyone goes through the grieving process is the first thing is denial, then anger, then depression, then acceptance. And that's the route that I went. And it's interesting is the correlations, and the reason I mention that is these correlations between that grieving process, because I wanted to go back to a place and a time that no longer existed. And when I think about what's happened in the last 2 years or whatever with COVID and lockdown, so many people and business owners and people want to go back to the way that it once was. That time, that place has gone. And you can sit there and you can deny. You can get angry, you can deny, but at some point you can get depressed, but at some point you've got to accept. And it was at that point I kind of looked at my entire, that model effectively of those 2 or 3 years or whatever it was when I first moved down, that was kind of allowed me to look back to the past and go, okay, that's what I need to do. I need to kind of let go and then move forward. But, you know, I wouldn't change a single thing. I wouldn't change one single thing about my life.
I saw recently that you shared on social media, you've actually got quite a lot of video footage from around that time. Looking back at yourself in that footage, what kind of thoughts come to mind?
It's an amazing question. Well, when I first landed, and you've not seen the full version, I landed here and my mum and my sister, who also moved, they was there, and my mum says to me, "What are your plans?" And I said, "I'm probably going to go and work at Butlin's or..." She said, "Oh, you can probably get a job on the waltzers. They paid £6 a day, you know, pushing the waltzers." That's all right, yeah. I said, "Well, either way, I'm going to go and move my claim over here, and I'm going to go and I might start a business or get involved in a business or something." And I say that on this exact, like within minutes of me arriving in Highbridge, and I've got that on video, and it's like, whoa, to have that moment in video and to say that and to be able to look back 25 years on, I mean, what's the likelihood that you're going to capture that? It was interesting. I got a load of tapes up from that time, and probably about 8-9 tapes, probably 8 hours, converted recently. And there's like literally about 10 minutes of worthwhile, that's it. It's really quite sad. It's quite sad because, you know, the cameras are on people's feet and stuff and whatever. But I look back at that, going back to the question, I should be a politician now, my answers. But I look back at that time and I see a kid with aspirations and hopes and dreams that would have been shattered. And yet he still had positivity to kind of say that, oh, I'm just going to sit here and smoke weed. That wasn't my answer. It was, I'm going to get involved in a business or something. You know, and yet look at this kind of you know, that happened, that happened, and I think there's something in this. It's actually, if you never lose sight of your destination, you'll always get there.
I want to bring things more up to date, but I suppose just reflecting on what you said, some of the kind of notes there, would it be fair to say that what you do now and how you look to encourage and support small business is very much based on your own experience in maybe struggling, knowing what you wanted from your own career and kind of pursuing those things?
A couple of things here. So I did start off in small business, but increasingly I'm being sort of groomed by big businesses. I am getting pinged by big businesses. At the moment, I mean, yesterday I spoke in front of 1,000 chief financial officers. I was the headline act when they had the CFO of Jaguar speaking yesterday. The Generation CFO. Last week I was over in Dubrovnik. The week before I was over in Spain speaking at $1 billion businesses. So I think that what's interesting about this is there's a universal message. But what's also interesting about this is I can tell you in 1997, when Tony Blair got in, things changed for me. Things changed for me because he gave me, I based my business on New Labour 1997. I genuinely did. So there's some lessons there about New Labour when they came in, and okay, history wasn't kind to them. But somewhere along the way, that definitively shaped and steered me, that whole era about what you can become, that actually things can only get better. And it all starts with belief. And I bring that kind of belief to small businesses. And like I say, increasingly now, bigger, larger businesses, like literally, even from my perspective, I'm waiting for somebody to say, look, you've been found out. It's mind blowing. So yeah, we can go there.
Yeah, I maybe want to revisit some of that a little bit later, but I suppose at that time, a small business would look around for support and maybe find something like the Chamber of Commerce, which is very old fashioned in its style, isn't it?
But once again, it's just a lot of people with Toby jugs and monocles and top hats saying how clever they are. And it's like, I was involved in some business organization with my business. And we paid money out for 10 years. And then he's, yeah, we offer you this, 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 and this, and this. And in the event that you get a VAT investigation, we're there for you. We got a VAT investigation. And actually, they just said, oh, we can't do anything about it. I went, well, you saw me on this basis. Now, as it happened, the VAT investigation, it was fine. Clean bill of health. But you know, and there's a lot of chocolate fire guards that are kind of sold as panaceas for business. And actually, I recognize that. So having started a small business off, but yeah, we're getting to all that. And you can steer me. I know exactly where you're trying to go with that.
So when you started, it started very much as the networking was the core of your business. Is that right?
Well, no, I started as a marketing business back in 2004. I told my employer to shove his job up his ass in December the 16th, 2004. Wonderfully liberating experience for those 3 hours whilst I drove home. And, you know, I arrived home and the wife's outside. Sorry, your wife's saying, you're home early. You're here to look after baby Ben while I go shopping. So, you know, I started my own marketing business off. And I said, how difficult could it be? And the first year, I did 28 grand. Second year, halfway through, 48,000. And at which point, I then went all in on the networking because I seen that there was scale and opportunity there. So I run my own marketing firm first.
With that networking sort of decision, was the motivational speaking, was that persona a natural part of that, or did that come later?
No, none of this was natural. And this is the thing about it. People could not hear me speak, could not understand me. I've got video footage. I will send you a link, by the way. You look at it, it's traumatic, terrible. Me and T, 2009 speaking, you know, on our cage, it's just terrible. And actually, so what happened was, the short version, I started my networking meetings off in Bridgewater, and then every 2 weeks, it was, you know, that was it. And then we have a guest speaker at each of them. And obviously, I've not got a big pool to work from, so I was the guest speaker. So, you know, I kept doing that and doing that and doing that. And about 2 or 3 years in, people started saying, oh, you're so motivational, you're so inspirational. And then I kept hearing that. And I went, how'd you become a motivational speaker? just make a website and say you're a motivational speaker. And that's what I did. And then that increased then as time went on. And then thought, how do you become the UK's number one motivational business speaker? And I did that. Now, here's an interesting one for you, and you'll appreciate this, is that the UK's number one motivational business speaker, it's a term that never existed prior to me making it up. There's no records of it online. Now, everyone's using it, but I was the first person to come up with that term. It was either a motivational speaker or a business speaker. And by doing that, I kind of created this field of one. And now as soon as I did that, it was great because everyone went, whoosh, you're not the UK's number one motivational business speaker. Well, who is then? Well, it's not you. Okay. So what happened is it created conversational strategy and everyone was talking about Brad Burton. He's an arsehole. Brad Burton, never heard of him. Yeah, he's an arsehole. And it was a bit like Dirty Dancing at the end. This Brad Burton is really quite good, you know.
It's also quite subjective, right? Because number one in what way? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, but once again, in a court of law, I think I could defend it now. I genuinely think, because I'll tell you what, you show me one motivational business speaker that's got a better showreel. You show me a motivational business speaker that's spelled with JCB, Bentley, Costa, the list goes on. Show me one.
Going back to our previous conversation around like digital marketing, if you can convince the internet or convince Google... that this is the thing, then that is the thing. That is truth,
and so,
right?
And that's exactly what I've done. So you go on Google, UK, who's the UK's? I've even got a pop-up Google box that says, information box, I own it. It says, yeah, Brad Burton's the UK. You couldn't make it up, but I actually said at the time, I said to my wife, I said, watch this. Because I went, if I'd have gone into it from the outset, instead when I said motivational speaker, I said, oh, the UK's number one, it wouldn't have washed. So I had to ease myself. And the interesting thing about this one, you could have probably edited this in actually, but the interesting thing about this one is you think about Muhammad Ali, I'm the greatest. He got beat 5 times, right? But, Floyd Mayweather, I'm the greatest. No, you're not Floyd. Muhammad Ali is. Yeah, but why? Because he got beat 5 times. Ah, but it wasn't just about Muhammad Ali being a boxer. It was about him as an individual, about what he did. Ah, so now you've got him. Honestly, it was amazing. Some idiot on the internet, and you'll get this, digital, right? Come on, idiot. Trying to bait me. Ah, Brad Burton thinks he's UK. I'm going to be the UK's number one by the end of November. Amazing. Everyone just piled on him. I just stood back and watched. Everyone said, yeah, but Brad's the UK number one. And guess what? That guy, that was 4 years ago, just fell away. So the thing is, because, and I think this is my Manchester smarts as well. I think, somebody tried to goad me into a fight, not a physical one, because I'd take them out, wouldn't I? But you know what I mean? But if they tried to goad me into a fight, I'm too canny for that. I'm not your conventional business owner. So actually somebody comes at me when you've been brought up in the mean streets of Salford, cool.
Talking about motivation then, and that being something which, when those first people said, you're inspirational and motivational, one of the things that I was thinking about is obviously people have different personalities and are motivated by different things and in different ways. So how do you account for that in your work?
Ah, see, that's interesting. You say that. Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, I want you, Lewis, to rewind to a time in your life when if you'd have made a different decision, your life would have been fundamentally different. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't rewind. But what happens at night is you spend your time going backwards and thinking, oh, if that hadn't happened, and you end up getting depressed. When you think about the past, you get depressed. And then what happens at night is when you're thinking about the past, then you start thinking about the future. Oh my God, what happens if that happens? What happens if a nuclear holocaust? What happens if it? And then you spend your time in the future and you're full of anxiety. So in the past is depression, in the future is anxiety. And what we don't do as human beings is we don't stay in today, we don't focus on today. Now, that was a quick example. Every single individual has a time in their life that they kind of rewind to. Every single individual. So as a motivational speaker, and bear in mind, I've not read any books on motivational speaker. This is just, I know myself, and I go back down to that. Remember what I said? I rewinded the 2nd of January over and over again, right? Actually, if that hadn't happened, I'd still be in Manchester, still have my friends. And then I look at it and I go, hang about, something so terrible, and you don't have a crystal ball, right? So you don't know the future. I do. Now, this is the thing, right? When you look at that, is that that's when you say, oh, the people have got different aspirations. Everyone's got a high ceiling. So your version of success, whatever that is, I don't know, right? So my version of success, back in the day when I first started making money, I wanted a 10-bedroom mansion, okay? I've got a 5-bedroom house in Somerset, one room that I don't go in. If I'd have realised my dream of a 10-bedroom mansion, I'd have 6 fucking rooms I don't go in. So it doesn't make no difference from a ceiling perspective. We've all got the same, and this is the bit that people, but I'm looking for higher net worth individuals to motivate them. I can motivate high net worth individuals because they sat there and they're full of, they've got gold taps in the house, but they're miserable as we've seen. They ain't happy. And you go and buy another car, and for a brief moment, everything is great. And then that car falls away and you're still not happy. And you get a 14-inch television and you're still not happy. You get a 60-inch television, then an 80, then a 100-inch television, then you get a cinema screen. And you recognize that actually you're spending your life chasing. And one day you're going to die. And actually on your dying breath, you're going to go, oh, thank Christ, I got a 100-inch curved television. No. So this is the way that from a speaker perspective, I realize I speak at the highest level. I know billionaires. And it's like, how does this kid from Salford, Manchester, who lived above a chippy in Weston-super-Mare, literally on the Bourneville estate, the chippy there, it's called Libra Fish Bar. My house was number 8 on there. That's before I started my business off. So how does this guy manage to, you know, manage upwards and downwards? And I believe it's that crossover. I believe somewhere on a Venn diagram, you kind of got this kid who was a working class street kid, and then somewhere along the way I managed to capture because I'm so honest to people. So I don't give a monkey's. I don't go and see someone who's a billionaire, millionaire. I'm not asked. You don't see me doffing my cap. Hello, Lord Sugar. Hello, Lord Sugar. Oh, shut up. You're just a normal person, right? Like everyone else. So I think, you know, how do I hit targets as such? How do I reach people? By recognizing that every single individual has hopes, fears, and dreams. Your hopes are hopes, my hopes are hopes, your fears are your fears, my fears are my fears, and that's it. And actually, your best ability, whatever your highest level is your highest level. Whatever my highest level is the highest level. There's a good version of you, and there's a not so good version of you. There's a version of you that wakes up, Lewis, and you're full of beans and enthusiasm and positivity. And there's a version that, for no rhyme or reason, you wake up, you've got a face like a slapped ass, you're all miserable, you're down on the world, and you don't want to be there. Welcome to being a human. So it doesn't make no difference what car you drive, what house you live in. Everyone has the same fears, aspirations, and self-doubt, and actually, imposter syndrome. Everyone, including me.
I want to talk about one of your, I suppose, big takeaway points or mantras that I've seen you sort of bring up in your big pitch, which is about lighting the candle. So what's that about and where did it come from?
Well, right now, I'm showing you my candle. Literally, I have a candle. So it's funny because, and this goes back down to the DNA of any kind of progress in our lives. You don't actually see it until you kind of look back. And I wrote in one of my books, I can't remember which one it was, but I wrote in one of my books something like people buy a watch but they won't wear it because they're scared of it getting scratched or stolen. You shouldn't have bought the fucking watch. That's the reality of it. People go and buy a car and they go and park it onto disabled spaces. You shouldn't have that car. And actually somewhere along the way I realized something, that people spend their life saving money for a rainy day and then they die. And actually I recognize something, and one of the things that I say is that I want you to say, yes, but the whole thing you think about this last couple of years, you know, I was supposed to be going to America the last 2 years. It's not happened. I'm going there this year, all being well. But I say, yes, but the whole day, yes, light the candle, because you've got a big row of candles that you've not lit. You got for Christmas, you've not lit. Birthday, not lit. Valentine's Day, not lit. And you're saving them. When's a good time to light a candle? Like when? You know what I mean? Genuinely, I've got a candle lit. So it's not like I'm living the mantra, but I say, yes, put a hole there. Yes, light the candle. Yes, buy the lure pack. Life is too short for cheap own brand spreads. And what I mean by that, and people like scratching their heads going, what are you on about? But when that penny drops for people, it's funny, I've got a conversation with Lurpak next week, true story. But honestly, I swear, ahead of market, I swear. So when I look at this whole thing, is that, it's a bit of decadence, but it's not going to go by a Ferrari. See, most people, you know, and certainly from a child of the 70s like me, was looking at a, you know, smoking the Bandit Lamborghini Countach, wistfully, you know, like a Victorian street urchin looking in the window, looking at a cake, looking at these amazing vehicles and wanting one of them. And for the vast majority of kids from Salford, they're never going to have a Lamborghini Countach. But every single individual can have a little bit of decadence with some Lurpak. And what I mean by that, it's almost like it's a declaration of living your life, because we're too conservative in our world, believing that, oh, I'll go and sort it out next week, or, oh yeah, I'm going to save up for a big holiday. And sometimes big holidays never come. There was a guy that I spoke in Edinburgh, and I spoke and he came up crying. I said, go on. Big tall guy, about 6'4", about 60-year-old, crying. I said, go on. That's what I said, go on. And he said, I wish I'd have heard you 20 years ago. He said, I've got an £18 million business and me and my wife, we're going to go on a world cruise. I promised her I'd go on a world cruise this year. She died last year. And it's like, yeah. And that to me is indicative of what happens as human beings. You know, I don't know when I'm going to joss it, right? 1973. But what I do know, 49, quite easily to fair to say that I'm halfway through my life, if not three quarters. So when's a good time to book the holiday, to take the kids on Disney World? When's a good time to light the candle that you're saving? When's a good time to buy the lure pack? And there's something about that, that every single time as a motivational speaker that you go into wherever you go to shopping and you see a lure pack, you go, ha. And yeah, whether you buy it or not, but you've just tuned yourself into actually living. And I think that's what it is, because this, you know, I'm being hyper connected with a network with thousands of people. And actually, you know, you'll often see somebody's, on your social media, I think this X person has died or passed. And I say, oh, I only saw him last week. Yeah, he was going to go on holiday in August. He was going to, guess what? That's what happens. I only saw him last week. That's what I hear all the time. I only saw him last week. Yeah, well, guess what? That's what happens. It's like some surprise that people die. So that's what that is. So rather than saying, hey, guess what? You're going to die. I say, you know, put the holiday, light the candle, buy the lure pack.
How much of Brad on stage is that class clown of your childhood wanting to entertain and wanting to get a reaction from people?
You know, I if all I'd ever achieved here and in, Lewis, I've achieved more than I ever dreamed possible. You know, I'm an international speaker. And I'm just like, I was with Tim Peake last week, or 2 weeks ago. Astronaut Tim Peake, the ISS, British astronaut, the guy, the only Briton who has ever been on a spacewalk. I had dinner with him, 7-course dinner. What is going on? I'm from Salford, Manchester. We're supposed to steal cars. And it's like, whoa, you know, so yeah, but it just shows you that if you apply yourself and you never lose sight of your destination, you'll always get there. I'm still the same guy that I always have been. And I think that it stems back, go back to where we started with my mum and actually being the protector, having to be the man of the house, having to be the alpha male, the lion. And that's what I've always been. I've gone out of my way to help and protect people. But I'll tell you what's been quite sad, genuinely sad, is not everyone has the same values as me in terms of that. You know, I will do any, if I say to someone, I will do something, it's getting done. You can rest assured, if I say, whatever that problem is, it's not a problem, that problem has just gone away. Fact, otherwise I wouldn't say it. But so many people, I would say that 92% of people on the last 15 years, I'm just from pulling the figure out, 92% of people don't do what they say they're going to do. And a good example of this is last night I was due to be having a podcast with you. And for the first time in 15 years, genuinely, I had no notification, the first appointment I've ever missed, and you're so fair with that one. But I've never, but that was, and that's what I'm saying, because I'm a man who, when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. So that's why it really pained me yesterday, that it was an oversight. But there's a really interesting Bradism here. You might need your beeping machine. You know, I say that a mistake is only a mistake after the event. Up until that point, it's the correct decision. No one, including me, wakes up and says, I'm going to go and fuck up today. But occasionally I do. And when it comes to making decisions in our lives, is that the reason we don't make decisions is we're scared they're the wrong ones. We're scared they're the wrong ones. And actually, if you knew that every single decision that you made move you forward in some way, or you couldn't make a mistake, people would make more decisions. And I live by this mantra. And this is a mantra that served me. And this is what Bentley Global used, their enterprise team, retail team, is that I make a decision in 24 seconds. If I can't make a decision in 24 seconds, I'll make one in 24 minutes. If I can't make one in 24 minutes, I'll revisit in 24 hours. If after 24 hours, I can't make a decision, I've just made a decision, it's not important, next. There is no correlation between time spent on a decision, fact by the way this is, right, science fact, no correlation between time spent on a decision and it being more correct. Once you've got as much data as you're likely to get, you have to make a decision. And I live my life by that. I kind of do my decisions before I get to them. So when I reach, most people say, now what, when the shit's hitting the fan, oh, COVID, now what, oh, we need to evaluate. I was already evaluating back in November when I was listening to LBC and then the first cases in Wuhan and they had a guy. I was listening and I played enough computer games in my time to know that without a vaccine, this was getting to us. So I was kind of on it. I was on it, and that's what I do. I get to the now what stage because people under stress don't make great decisions. So I get to that now what moment way before I'm under stress.
So I want to talk a little bit about the last couple of years. Obviously, as you mentioned, the pandemic really decimated business for a lot of people. But what it's also done is disrupted the relationship that people have with work, how people work and why people work as well. And how have you seen that in the people that you interact with?
So when I think about my business, we was running 5,000 business networking meetings up and down the land, 5,000. So I could go from anywhere from Taunton all the way through to Scotland, and every single motorway junction, there was a four networking meeting. So, you know, real life meetings at Premier Inns, Beef Eaters, blah, 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 blah. 5,000 a year. Boris Johnson, 15th of March, please stay at home. 16th of March, no business. Now, you know, if you think how long this was going to last, we all thought it was going to, well, he told us 12 weeks, and that was 817 days ago. As of today, 817 days ago, for something that was going to last 160 or 150 days. So, you know, nothing could have prepared, no amount of planning could have prepared. So from my perspective, lots of stuff had changed. We had to go online. We was the first networking organization to go online, networkcentral.biz, plug there. But we was the first networking organization to go online. And you know, that's first 3 or 6 months. I've got a full networking beret somewhere. Because it was a war mode. I got us into war mode. I got my guys through. And as a leader, I was there, bayonets on, lads. We're going to do this. Every ounce of my motivation and my everything that had brought me to that point. And then it started getting tough. 6, 7, 8 months or whatever it was. Then it started, people were looking to me for answers and I didn't have any. And it ended up, it culminated in me having not a nervous breakdown, I had a burnout. I had a nervous breakdown in 2012, so I kind of know what the difference is. A nervous breakdown is 2.5 years to get fixed. A burnout is 2 to 3 weeks. That's probably the easiest layman's term to explain what had gone on. So it was a tough old time for everyone, and everyone's relationship with work has changed, including mine. I look at it now, and I kind of question, you know, do I want to go and get a big glass office again? Do I want to go and get the spinny chairs and the BMW 5 Series? I'm playing up now. I never got a 5 Series. Anyone who knows me knows I had the BMW i8. Boom. Right. But the point I'm making is that, you know, that whole thing so less important now. And actually, it's about, and this is what I talk about, life is about life. And the only time that we realize it's about life is when we're about to lose our life. And it's so important that we recognize that you shouldn't be going through your life to work. You should be going through your work to live. And there's a fundamental difference right now. And actually, a happy workforce is a productive workforce. And, you know, I have no idea where this ends. Right now, Lewis, I'm showing you a snow globe. Now what snow globe? And I go and shake that up. And guess what? That snow is going to take time to settle. And when it settles, it might not settle right. And it might have to get shook up again. I have made the decision Christmas Eve this year to stop watching the news. I stopped watching the news, and I'm not. I used to be on the news every single day. Mail Online was my go-to, Sky News, Rolling News, into politics in a big way, and I've stopped watching the news. Now I'm now 135 days in, I think, of not watching the news. That's a good example of this, that I realised that mental health is a powerful tool here to productivity, to happiness, and everything. And if you're filling your pint pot up with rubbish, you know you're not going to helping yourself. And the other thing, and this is something that I always said about running a business, I would rather work 4 hours at 100% than 8 hours at 50%. And the problem you've got, you know, just because you pay an employee for 8 hours a day doesn't mean they're working 8 hours a day. And I think that I've always recognized this because I was that employee that you'd pay me for 8 hours a day. And I would sit there on Sky News or whatever it was. The boss would walk past, it'd be click, click. Hi, Steve, I'll get that report to you later. Brilliant. Yeah, you know, it's really all looking good. Thank you. Boom, straight back onto Eurogamer. You know, so I'm a realist. Human beings are not robots. They're human beings, and we need to start treating them as such. And that recognizing that, you know, I'm never going to have a Radio 4 voice. And actually, if you think about from a motivational speaker's perspective, you know, this is what I think motivational speakers have been like before. They've gone over Mount Kilimanjaro with a ringing unicycle and a Pacamac. You know, that's never me. So you can find your own way. And actually, I think I've found my own working methods. But right now, as you said, I'm actually, it's disrupted my entire work. And actually, I'm trying to work out, as we all are, because I'm finding now that people are back, but they're not back. They're like back. If it was like a circle saying back, they'd be back, but the crust would be as the center, they're not really back. And I think that everyone's costume playing, being back, and they're not really.
One of the things, I suppose, as part of being back, as part of where we're at from a work environment and a work agenda perspective more than ever before, is around things like work-life balance, things like mental health in the workplace and how it's affected by our working lives. Things that might be viewed as sort of a compromise or a balance. And one of the observations about your message, your content, your books is that they're very direct, very black and white. So, but the way in which you talk about it is very much like, well, it is about happiness. It is about putting those things which are important first. So do you ever find yourself thinking, how does a message like get off your ass sit with the need to be well with yourself?
So let me explain. Life Business Just Got Easier, written in 2012, published in 2013. I was on mental health issues way before anyone else. I had a nervous breakdown. I'm going to show you something right now. I'm going to turn my camera to show you a picture of Brad Burton having a nervous breakdown. This is me having a nervous breakdown at the exact moment that I'm having a nervous breakdown. In that my photographer, I just spoke in London. He was there, he captured that picture. That picture was me saying, I quit, I can't do this. 3 stone heavier, high blood pressure, marriage going to shit, legal problems, business problems, financial problems, and I'm having a nervous breakdown. And it took me 2.5 years to get back to normal. So, and this is what I've talked about. So if you look at my books, Get Off Your Ass, which is me starting a business off, delivering pizzas to keep that business afloat. Get Off Your Ass too, when I started morphing into this kind of, hey, guess what, this personality, see Brad Burton, Life Business Just Got Easier, which was anger about. That's about work-life balances, but not pretend work-life balance. You know, oh, I'm all stressed out. Oh, well, tomorrow I'm going on Burnham-on-Sea. I'm going to go and have fish and chips and ice cream. Oh, look, I'm fixed. No, doesn't work like that. All that is going to Burnham-on-Sea, having an ice cream and fish and chips. So Life Business Just Got Easier was me captured that whole moment about what it was like when I'd lost the plot. And actually, I remember walking my dog Tyson, Labradoodle, walking on Bridgewater Canal, crying audibly to myself, saying, I just want to feel normal out loud. I just want to feel normal. I just want to feel normal. I just want to feel normal. So this is the thing, you know, the way that I look, I know I look like a drug dealer, right? I'm not anymore. We can all change. But the point I'm making is, you look at this, is that if I, as a big, tough, Salford, alpha male, can go turn on and say, guess what, there's me crying with my Labradoodle, then actually it gives anyone permission to not hide from it. So if you think about my book, even just the titles, Get Off Your Ass, Get Off Your Ass Too, then the third one is Life Business Just Got Easier, followed by, now what? I've reached every single goal in my life. Every single financial goal in my life. I had a team, 42-year-old, I think it was. Now what? Now my fifth book is called Life Maker, which is almost based in kind of grounded spirituality. That's probably the best way. So it's my version of spirituality, Brad Burton's version of spirituality. And as a guy from Salford, you know, if I'm there at 49 and I've got that kind of mindset, I think there's a real lesson for everyone here. And I think that my life is everyone's life. I think the difference is I'm stupid enough to share it.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier, and it's something I wanted to come back to, because I know, again, I think it was something you posted recently on LinkedIn, which was that kind of whistle-stop tour of everything that we've covered so far. But in there, you talk about bluffing. You talk about still waiting to be found out. Even after all this time, is there really a part of you that thinks you're getting away with something?
No, I'm just playing up. I'm just playing up. I'm just absolutely playing up to it. You know, there comes a point when actually blagging will get you so far, and actually you've got to be, look, I've taught myself onto some big stages in my life, right? And you're off stage and you're going shoot, 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 shoot. And if there was a way to go and get a Men in Black normalizer, what are they called, and press the button and give them the money back and disappear, I would do. So I would have. But the only way that you get to where you need to be is by pushing yourself through where you don't want to be. And that's exactly what I've done. So yeah, still waiting to be found out. And it's just comedic writing. There's nothing to find out anymore. No one's got anything on me. There's that, you know, there's no, and this is why I wrote about chapter two, Get Off Your Arse, about what happened in Manchester, because I didn't want anyone to be able to go, So every step of my way, any kind of mistakes that I've ever made in my life, they're all documented. So if I did ever make it big and become a Dragon's Den, right? Not going to happen. But if I did, then the Mail Online could go, we found out he got shot at. Well, yeah, I could have told you that. It was in the book. So I did, I've kind of safeguarded myself throughout that. So there's nothing there. No one's got anything on me.
I suppose then, and this is probably my last question, being the outsider is kind of a big part of your brand. But to some extent, you know, what you've done and the networks that you've built and the people that you work with now mean that you're not the outsider anymore.
Amazing. Amazing question. You know what? Hilarious, because the reason I say it's hilarious is because I said that all my life I've been an outsider, and now I'm the insider surrounded by all you outsiders. I created a gang. That's the reality of it. I created the gang that I always wanted. But the difference is, it's now a nice benign gang with full of positivity. And that is what I'm it's amazing. I look at it and I think to myself, I think, okay, you know, when you're involved in stuff as a kid, why? Because you want to belong. And actually I look at it now and I've always wanted to belong. I've always been the outsider. I've managed to create myself. And it was amazing when somebody said to me, I was 27 years old, so 22 years ago. Ugh. Anyway, somebody said to me, I was working for a company, and the gaffer said to me, we used to go out to like Soho House and private members clubs, and you'd spend 1,500 quid on like beer and buying drinks for everyone every night. And like, I could use his credit card to go, it's weird, just weird, you know, like a multi-million pound business, but that's how they did it. And he said to me, he said, do you know why I've hired you? I said, well, because I'm a sales guy, even though I didn't like sales or marketing. He went, no. He said, because do you not realize what a complete nut job you come across as? What are you on about? He said, you don't realise what a complete nut job you come across about. I said, what the fuck are you on about? And he said, it's the third time, he said, you don't, mate, what are you on about? He said, I call you a bread grenade. He said, I go and put you in a room full of squares, and within 10 minutes, everyone's your mate. And within 10 minutes beyond that, everyone's saying, right, Brad, what are we doing? And you've managed to become a leader of these individuals that are super powerful and super, you know, and I've never seen anyone be able to do that. What are you on about? Me having a laugh. And it goes back down to where we started. It's a class clown. You know, everyone loves a class clown. And that's what I've become, you know, a class act clown, effectively. But also recognising my weaknesses, recognising my flaws, recognising my strengths. And that's what I've always played to.
Brad, we're now going to play Somerset Address or Obscure Movie.
Okay, can I just say I've been waiting for this, like genuinely like looking forward to this. I don't think you realise I've got myself a little brandy here ready to go. Let's go.
Awesome. So I've got eight names, and each of them is either a place in Somerset or it's the title of a movie. So I'm going to give you the name and you have to tell me which one you think it is.
Let's go.
Your first name is Meadowland.
Film.
It is a film. It's a 2015 drama starring Luke Wilson. Have you seen it?
No.
So it was a good guess then.
Yeah, good at it. Get 8 for 8, then you say, hang on, this guy.
I will, yeah, maybe. He's Googling this.
Yeah. Not no hands.
Number two is Delta Rise.
Movie.
It's a place, I'm afraid.
Devastated.
It's in Bishop's Lydia.
Is it really, bro?
Okay, so that's 1 from 2 so far. Your next name is Giant's Grave.
That's a place.
It is a place. Yeah. It's in Chard.
Brilliant.
Okay, number four is Beat Street.
Movie.
It is a movie. Yeah. It's a 1984 film about hip hop and breakdancing.
Correct. I remember it.
Great. Number five is Rabbit Hole.
Oh, it's got to be a place.
It's a film.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, about conspiracy theories, I assume.
Possibly, I haven't seen it. Okay. It's got Nicole Kidman in it, though. So,
I've got to ask you, Lewis, how on earth do you research these?
That's a good question, actually. there's a couple of articles around strange names in Somerset. Yeah, yeah. And in addition to that, it's kind of having a little look on Google Maps every once in a while.
So plagiarising the word you're looking for there, Lewis.
Yeah, a little bit of plagiarism.
I'm joking, go on.
And the films were, I don't know, I just sort of looked for names of things that might be confusing. All right, your next one is Cut Tongue Lane.
You couldn't possibly have a name of a place called that. Nobody would have that. So I'm going with Mover.
It is a place. Genuinely a place in Somerset called Cut Tongue Lane.
No way. That's wacky.
So, next one is Bank Shot.
Please.
It's a movie.
Oh, I'm doing terrible.
Oh.
Devastated.
It's a crime caper from 1974.
For my time.
Yeah. And your last one is Behind Berry.
Place.
It is a place.
Yeah.
So by my counts, that was three.
Not too bad. Listen, I'm better at writing books and playing computer games and talking Star Wars. Now, next time that we do this, you go and do some Star Wars Q&A. Then I think
sure. Yeah, we'll do something which is not related to Somerset at all.
A big geek. But no, I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for the opportunity there, Lewis.
Yeah, before we go, where can people find out more about you and the work that you're doing?
So just check me out at bradburton.biz, all the socials, Brad Burton, and of course that business network, if you are interested there, networkcentral.biz, it's all .biz. But listen, I'd love to hear from you. And like I say, we're on social media as well. Do follow me and say hello.
Brad, thank you so much for your time. You've been a fantastic guest. It's been great hearing your story.
Epic. High five, Lewis.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Somerset Stories. If you liked it, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on social media at Somerset Stories or email hello@somersetstories.com. Somerset Stories is a Whitstone production and music is provided by Jezzar under Creative Commons.